And of course,
good afternoon. It's 3 p.m. You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette Lake Charles Public Radio for Acadiana. Weather for the listening area, about a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms this evening. Mostly cloudy with a high of about 86 degrees or so, a north breeze at 5 miles per hour. A 30% chance of precipitation this evening, a low this evening of about 64. On Wednesday, a 30% chance of showers sticking with us, partly sunny with a high near 85. Currently, it is partly cloudy and 83 degrees here on the campus of UL Lafayette. In just a few minutes, we'll be joining Judith Merriweather in the studio.
Joining me in the KRVS studios this afternoon, I am really happy to say, are the UL students. Some of our listeners may have heard a few weeks ago that won the Gulf Coast Regional Imperial Barrel Award. And then now they have just returned from Long Beach, California, where they won the International Imperial Barrel Award. Over 100 schools were competing, and the UL team from the School of the Department of Geology won that award. With me in the studio is Dr. Brian Locke, who is the faculty advisor for the Imperial Barrel team here at UL Lafayette. Team member Sarah Beth Maxwell is with us. Chris Hatamian, Joey Grimble, and Daniel Dudley are here. They were all on the team, went to Long Beach, California, and again won internationally. Over 100 teams participating in this competition that is sponsored by the American Association of Petroleum Geologists. So congratulations to all of you, and I'm so glad that we're able to have you back in the studios. Dr. Locke, I think I'm going to ask you to tell us just a bit about your part in this, and maybe tell us just a bit about the Department of Geology first.
Well, the department is very much oriented towards petroleum, and of course that makes sense with our location in Lafayette, and we get a lot of support from local industry. Particularly, I should take the opportunity to mention Mary Broussard, who works with Plains Exploration.
And she's an alum, right?
Who has been our industry sponsor, and she has spent a lot of time with these students as well. So this is her victory as well as theirs.
Mm. And you have been at UL since 1977, so you have really seen the progression of the school and the way the students have improved, and the department has really helped become a better department.
Oh, definitely.
Well, tell us about how long UL has been involved in the Imperial Barrel competition.
Well, the competition originally started with an idea from Imperial College London, which is the origin of the Imperial part of the name. And the AAPG decided this was an excellent way to train and encourage young geologists and prepare them for the petroleum industry. And they ran it for the first time in 2007 with an invited short list of schools. And at that stage, I saw it advertised and contacted them, and they said, no, sorry, we're not going to accept any additional schools at this time, but it'll be open to any school that wants to apply in 2008. And so that's the first time that we got involved, and we've been involved each year since then. The competition is held at two levels. First of all, in the AAPG section, there are six sections in the U.S. and six international regions. And each of those holds a competition, and the winner goes through to the final round at the national convention. And we won the Gulf Coast in 2008. We won it again in 2010, and then we won it again this current year. So we've run it three times out of five at the local level. In the first year, when we went to nationals, we came sixth out of the 12 at that point. And this is the first time we've actually won it at the full-scale international level.
All right, and these are schools from all over the world.
All over the world,
In fact, second place was a school from Thailand.
Correct.
And then third place was the Colorado School of Mines.
Correct.
Which, I think that figures large in a lot of people's minds with having to do with geology and minerals. And so pretty amazing. So you put, how do you participate with these teams? How do you choose the students for the teams?
Well, it's my job as the faculty advisor to select a team of 5 graduate students. And if we had a PhD program, we'd be allowed to have a limit of two PhD students, otherwise master's students. And basically, I chose the people that I felt both were very bright students and also people who could work together as a team, because that teamwork aspect is really critical.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that over 40%, I think, of your graduate students are from out of state.
Correct, yes.
But it looks like the majority of the students on this team were actually from Louisiana.
Well, we chose the best.
Yes. Well, Joey, you are the captain of the team, Joey Grimble. You are a third semester graduate student in geology.
Yes.
Tell us about the time commitment. Did you know what you were in for going into this competition?
No, not at all. We knew that it would be at least 40-hour commitment a week, and once you get into it and start working, you commit as much time as possible, and everybody on the team was committed to 10, 12-hour days. So,
well, I think I remember when y'all were here the last time, you said you knew it was going to be 40, but really y'all were putting in more like 60 to 80 hours a week.
Yes. Everybody, unless something came up, really everybody worked through the weekends. I think we took off. We decided as a team we'd all take off one day for Mardi Gras. It was a commitment.
Well, and I guess that really reflects how many students from Louisiana were on the team that Mardi Gras won after that. So I'm sure y'all had a fabulous Mardi Gras. You really celebrated on that day. I think you also get time out for classes. Doesn't it count for, I think, 2 courses during the semester?
These guys basically are giving up their semester to this operation because they're 2 full months from when the data was first given to them to the regional competition, and then another nearly a month after that. So that's the whole semester, and you can't really expect people to be doing a lot of coursework in addition to that. So we give them the equivalent of two courses worth of credit.
All right. And you all work as a team, but it sounds like you each have a different part of the project that you work on. So, Joey, maybe describe what the competition is about. What sort of problem are you handed? What do you all have to do?
So we're given a data set. Companies donate these data sets. And what we're looking at is a set of seismic data and also some well logs. And so what we're trying to do is determine where the oil is in this data set or where it isn't. You can also, you want to suggest where to drill for the oil. But if you don't find any, it's a real-world problem. So you have the possibility of saying that it isn't worth drilling in our area. So you're given a potential lease block, and you're supposed to come up with prospects within this block. So that's what we did as a team. We had several different things that we had to look at, and so we broke up and tackled these individually and brought each other in and relied on each other for help. I thought there was going to be more interaction with the teachers actually teaching us through this, but what ended up happening is that we had to learn as a team and rely on each other whenever we were going through this process, and so we learned and grew together.
Absolutely. Well, what they pretty much do is they make it seem like we are an actual company, where they give us, and what Joey was saying earlier, what our data set was, they give us a location of our potential lease area and additionally some seismic lines, which is pretty much just a representative of the subsurface itself. So we're mapping out certain structures within the earth where the possible hydrocarbon accumulation would be. And through that spot, where as a company looking at the geophysical properties, the geology, petro analysis, more land and production issues, and present it to a group of judges, which would be our executive advisors or some of the managers, or even investors, where we would want to sell our proposed locations for drilling to these companies.
So it's very representative of what you might encounter working for a company.
Exactly. Hands-on, even the whole teamwork aspect of it, being able to merge each aspect of the petroleum industry into one unit.
All right. So you have this team. There are five members on the team. We have four of them here. And you mentioned that you all went and worked on separate aspects of this particular problem. Daniel Dudley, what was your work?
I had the prospect evaluation, mm-hmm. which of the three prospects, our three core prospects, I had to calculate the amount of reserves and delineate the risk for each one.
All right. So do you then choose one of the prospects, or you're working with all three of them?
We started off with Tier 1 and Tier 2 plays, and from our plays, we got three core prospects.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what sorts of determinations did you use to decide?
There are five geologic parameters that each prospect is risked on, and it's basically calculating the probability that those five parameters are there.
Mm-hmm. So what tools do you use to determine that?
I use the Rose & Associates MMRA risk sheet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking to a lot of lay people here who don't... it's like saying, well, I picked up the ruler or I looked on the... you're using tools that most of us know very little about.
When risking came out for the prospects, it was all done by hand. Mm-hmm. So nowadays, it's all in an Excel sheet. So you basically just figure out your variables, mm-hmm. and plug them in, and you calculate the reserves and then the respective risk as well.
All right. Well, it sounds like you did a really good job doing that. I'm sure. Now, Chris Atamian, you were not with us the last time after the Gulf Coast competition. What was your part in the team?
I worked on the basin evolution. I basically showed how our basin formed over time.
All right. And what is our basin?
It is the Colville Basin of North Slope, Alaska.
Okay. So you weren't dealing with Louisiana. You're dealing something very far away. Okay. And how did it form?
What happened was it detached from its source area, and then they call it the windshield wiper method. And then it formed, it detached and then rotated counterclockwise until it formed our basin.
And that's very important to understanding whether there is or is not any oil there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's it relates the sediment source areas to the tectonic history, and from this we can determine the important reservoirs.
All right. And I want to tell people who may just be tuning in, I'm speaking with the UL Lafayette team from the Department of Geology, who just recently won the International 2012 Imperial Barrel Award competition that is sponsored by the American Association of Petroleum Geologists. It is a huge honor. They were competing against over 100 teams from around the world, and they won, graduate students from here at UL Lafayette. And they're talking right now about the teamwork that they did, their individual work. Sarah Beth Maxwell and Joey Grimble, who's also the captain, you two worked together on a very particular part of the presentation. What was your part?
We did. We did the seismic interpretation by running S&T Kingdom Suite, where we pretty much just went in and looked at the digital well curves, looking at certain formation tops within the subsurface, mapping out each of the horizons that were known either source rocks or potential reservoirs, and just pretty much just looking at the overall geometry of the subsurface and picking out either the structural highs where our traps and seals would occur and just where our prospects or potential hydrocarbon accumulations would be.
Mm-hmm. And Joey, was that pretty much what you did?
Yeah, so Sarah mapped out our horizons and I went behind her and did the fault interpretation. And so the faulting is going to help with migration, also forming traps. So I took one part of it, and mm-hmm. we combined that after, you know, we'd finished our interpretation.
Okay. And the team member who's not with you right now, Mike Leahy, what was his part in it? What did Mike do?
Mike Leahy did the maturation of our source rocks, mm-hmm. and mapped those out for us. But also, you know, throughout time, you come up with a critical point where your source rocks turn into hydrocarbon, potential hydrocarbon holding rocks. Right. And so that's what he did, was map that out and prove that we had a petroleum system in place.
Okay, and so I'm sure the question people out there are wondering is, was there oil there?
Yes, there was. Alaska has one of the largest reserves ever. Like, even Prudhoe Bay is the number one oil field within the United States. Skaparik, which is actually one of our analogs for this project, is the second largest. And so these reserves were enormous.
All right. Now, so, and again, is this actual or theoretical?
This is actual. And yeah. One of the problems with the North Slope is just the environment. Mm-hmm. So it takes these massive reserves for people to actually go out there and make money off of producing from them.
All right. Also, I have to tell people, we need to talk just a little bit about what happened at the international competition. You all prepared your presentation to the second, almost. Mm-hmm. And you had a presentation that you won the Gulf Coast competition with and did beautifully, won first place. What did you all do to prepare for the international competition, knowing how many teams? What was the process? Daniel?
We had about a week to turn in our PowerPoint, so it was more of presentation changes, time constraints, figuring out how to get the, just how to tweak the presentation for the next level, for the international level.
And so the presentation is actually quite formal. You they give you a start time, and then the whole team goes and does their presentation, and it's very strictly timed. So what is the time limit you
all
have?
It's 25 minutes.
25 minutes.
Five team members, each person has about 5 minutes.
Okay. And I know you were a little bit concerned before you went into the international competition. What did you do to help that time and your presentation? Chris?
We spent most of the time just practicing until we could have the time down. We even had the time basically in our heads, so. Mm-hmm.
You could see the seconds ticking away in your heads. And so you were able to shave off some seconds so that you didn't sound so rushed in your presentation.
We just worked on taking out some of these words that we didn't need to say in the presentation, but that was tough since we were so attached to our individual pieces.
So who actually made that decision?
We mostly are faculty advisor.
Dr. Locke.
So each of y'all were loath to give up any of your words or any part of your presentation. Right. You had been working on it all semester long.
After 8 weeks, pretty attached to it.
That's right. Every word, even the small ones. So did anybody's presentation get more shaved off than anybody's, or were you like pretty equitable, Dr. Locke?
Well, we tried not to take too much off any one person, but it was little pieces here and little pieces there. We went through the whole thing and kept stopping and saying, well, let's take out that sentence. Let's shorten this bit here. Mm-hmm. And it was just enough difference that when they then presented, it didn't sound so terribly rushed. That was really the one negative that we took away from the judges from the regional competition, that in order to get everything in fact, I was able to watch the regional presentation. I wasn't at the international, but we were looking at our watches and we said, boy, they're running late on this. They're going to get cut off before they finish. And I noticed that some of them had realized how tight it was getting and suddenly started speeding up. They managed to finish on time, but it was very obvious that this was too fast.
Yeah. So you were a lot more relaxed and confident at the international competition because you had a little more time having shaved off these words.
And I think that's also how we won the international. We were so confident in our presentation. Everybody nailed their part alone. And so once the presentation was over, everyone's confidence was really boosted up, like, yes, we got it. And then the question and answers came, and that's what worried us.
Oh, so you actually had a question and answer
period.
You
have 10 minutes after the 25 presentation. So,
what kinds of questions did they ask y'all?
They were tough. They were pretty much just trying to base, like, how into the project did you actually get, just to see exactly how smart and how much you learned throughout it. So they were tough.
They didn't want those smooth-talking Louisiana kids to, like, just, you know, do a top spin.
Yeah, it was very technical questions about the way that we risked and, knowledge of the area, but also knowledge outside of, within the North Slope, but outside of our data set. We were asked one question about muckluck, which is the most expensive dry hole ever.
Ever in the entire world.
And it's close to our area and has kind of the same trap that we were looking at. And so, being that we had read up on it, whenever they asked that, we kind of smiled and said yes, and you could see a chuckle through the crowd that everybody recognized that, we had gone out and gotten this extra reading and actually put that into our risk, being that the seal was what happened to make this dry hole. And so that was our biggest risk in our prospect that looked like Mukluk's prospect.
Mm-hmm. So when you said the crowd, was there an audience for this as in addition to the judges?
Yeah, yes. So it's not as much a...
No, it's limited to the judges. There were, mm-hmm. what, 7 or 8 judges?
Nine of them.
And industry sponsors. Now, this is a very expensive operation that AAPG put together. Mm-hmm. The budget this year was $600,000.
So they're quite...
Of which $20,000 came to us as prize money, basically. But so the people, the companies that have donated this money were able, were invited to supply judges, who are normally exploration managers. And representatives of those companies were able to sit in and listen to the presentations and then rustle up some new hires immediately afterwards.
Oh, they're keenly aware in the development of young geologists. Well, Daniel, what do you think was the hardest question in afterwards? Considering maybe your part in it.
The hardest question was probably on... how we risked our reservoir, because mm-hmm. on Alaska, reservoir is one of the major risks, mm-hmm. and the judges wanted to find out how the reservoir differed between our three prospects.
Right. So and I think that was the very much question. Your part.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris Hatamian, what did you feel was the most difficult part in that question and answer?
I felt the Mukluk question was a pretty difficult question.
Yeah, just having to say that word without laughing.
Yeah, Chris nailed his part. We got a lot of compliments on how the basin evolution was handled, so mm-hmm. he wasn't sweating any of the questions.
All right. If you have just tuned in with me, my guests are 4 members of the 5-person team, the UL Geology Department team that won the International 2012 Imperial Barrel Award competition just recently in Long Beach, California, competing against over 100 teams from around the world. We heard Dr. Locke mention that they won $20,000 for UL, and that will be used for scholarships for the geology program to help with all these young geologists who will be streaming into UL, I'm sure. I'm sure your graduate school applications are already up for the coming year.
Well, most of them are already in before this happens,
yes.
But we've been swamped with applications anyway over the last several years. We do have a strong reputation as a petroleum-oriented department.
And since you've been winning the regional competition.
It all helps, mm-hmm. yeah. We do have a record here. And so students from all around the country looking for a career in petroleum, and the starting salaries are pretty good these days, and certainly all of our graduate students, or virtually all of our graduate students, go straight into jobs with major oil companies. So it's an attractive program for people from around the country.
Yeah.
There aren't that many schools in the United States that concentrate on petroleum in the way that we do.
Mm-hmm.
University of Texas, University of Oklahoma, Colorado School of Mines.
Well, perhaps. I think I heard Dr. Bucati, who's head of petroleum, say that there are actually only, and this is not the geology programs, that there are only 14 departments of petroleum engineering in the country. That's quite limited,
yeah.
So
yeah.
Definitely.
Now, there are many more geology
yes.
programs, but most of them emphasize environmental geology. Mm-hmm. Now, we do that to a certain extent as well, and in fact, that came into play with this particular exercise, because the North Slope, Alaska, is environmentally a very sensitive area, and it was necessary to take account of that in the planning.
All right. So you all presented actually the first day of the competition, the Thursday. You didn't hear about it till the Sunday. What did y'all do to sort of keep your butterflies down in those 3 days?
We just constantly stayed busy. We actually went on a field trip that Saturday. The next day, went to the Libra tar pits and walked around the museum and looked at all the fossils that they had previously found. And we also went to a rock formation just north of Los Angeles and walked around there and interpreted the actual rocks. So it was beautiful over there, just trying to find every little thing. Mm-hmm. And plus, it was the AAPG conference afterwards. And so there, they had many organizations for the young professionals, or even just they had their icebreaker where you walked around and looked at all the conference floor.
met your competitors. So it was announced on Sunday. I can only imagine, and you all confirm that, the barrage of professionals in geology who were interested in you after that. Did you get to meet a lot of people after that, after your win was announced?
Yes.
Did they talk about jobs, future jobs?
Yes, actually, through this, we were told by Chevron that they'll be coming to recruit here, as well as Schlumberger in the fall. So that was great for us. But I definitely met with a lot of the recruiters throughout the industry. And
Well, did it give you, having gone to this conference, I mean, winning, of course, but meeting these people from around the world, students from around the world, industries, did it give you, I don't know, change your sense of your profession and the people involved in it? What did you encounter there? What was your reaction to the entire conference and the association?
There's great people in geology. Really great. You know, one of the best things about this IBA experience was spending time at the international level. You know, they had a team from Egypt, they had a team from Saudi Arabia, Thailand, France. We're able to spend time with these guys and just talk to them about how it was in their countries and trying to get a more world view on things, but great people all the way through.
What a fabulous experience for all of you. Again, my guest, Dr. Brian Locke, who is in geology here at UL Lafayette, has been with the department since 1977, is the faculty advisor for the Imperial Barrel competition team here at UL. They've won the Gulf Coast competition several times in the past few years, but this year the team has won the international competition. My guests, Sarah Beth Maxwell, Chris Hatamian, Joey Grimble, and Daniel Dudley, all team members, and Mike Leahy not with us today. Congratulations again for winning this. Again, it came with a wonderful award, $20,000 that will go for scholarships for the program. And we just can't say enough. That's wonderful. We appreciate all of your hard work. And are you going to be on the team next year, or do you...
No, they're only allowed one shot at it.
Okay, but, you're already starting to...
I think that's probably enough for them, too.
You're going to have a little more time for holidays this coming fall, I guess. You won't have to just...
If I can put in another plug, if people are interested, the aapg.org website, if one was to go to that website and then click on the student key and then click on IBA, they have a movie of the actual award ceremony, which we found quite emotional.
All right, an IBA Imperial Barrel award.
Yes.
All right, so check out that website. That is the American Association of Petroleum Geologists, and find this wonderful team, find photographs, and the film of it. Again, congratulations to all of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Joining me in the KRVS studios is Sean Roy, who is head of the UL Opera Theater here at UL Lafayette in the School of Music, here to talk about a really special concert that's taking place this Saturday, May 19th, called Hollywood Jazz. And I think some people may remember, Sean, last year you all were here with Broadway Jazz.
That is correct.
Yeah, and that's a fundraiser for your Friends of Music, which is a great supportive organization that helps the School of Music out, particularly with scholarships.
Right, that's their main focus, mm-hmm. is to raise money for scholarships for music students. And they also sponsor some competitions we have. We have a voice competition, a guitar competition, an orchestra competition, and others. And that's their main focus. They just about to write us a check for $18,000 for next year. So they've
those
really,
are good friends.
They're a wonderful mm-hmm. organization. And their main fundraiser is their Music and Merriment at Christmas time, where it's a tour of three homes, and that's their big fundraiser for the mm-hmm, year. Mm-hmm. And that was all they did. And then they have this appreciation party in the spring, which we just had about a month ago. And last year, Garth and I were chatting and said, you know, they need to have another, you know, another fundraiser. And I said, I haven't performed with you in a while. I was talking to him, and I said, I really want to do some more, shall I call it, alternative kind of music that I'm not used to doing, but I really enjoy it. So we said, well, this is a good opportunity. Why don't we just do a little concert of some jazz favorites? So last year we did Broadway. I sat at the piano and played and sang kind of the original versions of these tunes, mm-hmm, and then Garth and his trio, which is Garth Alper on piano, Bob Nash, who's our string bass player, he plays, and then Troy Bro, who's our percussion instructor, he plays, and it's four faculty members, mm-hmm. and then they would do a jazz version, and we did a few tunes together, and so we said, well, let's do it again, and we had to pick something different, so mm-hmm. I wanted to do songs from movies this year, which is always fun to try to, you know, research and do stuff that I've always loved and wanted to sing, but never had a chance to. So
what are some of the songs that you've chosen?
What are some of the songs? Most of them, the majority, come from the 60s. I guess I grew up during that time, and I was taken with some of that music. It's unusual, and it kind of lends itself to a jazzy, bluesy mm-hmm. sound. Mm-hmm. So we're opening with a combination of The Shadow of Your Smile and The Windmills of Your Mind. Which are really interesting tunes. The Shadow of Your Smile is Johnny Mandel, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and it's from the movie The Sandpiper. Mm-hmm. And then The Windmills of Your Mind from the Thomas Crown Affair was Michel Legrand and Alan and Marilyn Bergman with the lyrics, who wrote a number of songs and were nominated a number of times. And both of those were Academy Award winners. Mm-hmm. So what I did was I went to the list of songs that won the Academy Award or were nominated, mm-hmm. and that's mm-hmm. kind of where all the songs came from.
There did seem to be a huge number of songs in movies back then, and not just musicals, but they had, you know, either an intro song or one that came afterwards. Very sophisticated.
They did, and they either played during the credits mm-hmm. or they were background music, but then they sang them at the end or something, and mm-hmm. they were sung by famous people. And like we're doing The Look of Love, a great Burt Bacharach tune. And I wanted to do a whole Burt Bacharach set because that's such my generation. Mm-hmm. But Garth said no. I said, well, let's do one.
You want to do all that jazz
and
improv.
What are you doing the rest of your life? And, you know, another Michel Legrand tune.
Well, you know, it's interesting when I said they're sophisticated because I remember listening to some of those mm-hmm. songs as children. I mean, obviously my parents loved those movies and loved listening to that song, but they were also accessible to young people as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was the music or the lyrics, but it's though we could really sense the quality of it, the lyrical.
I think some very interesting composition during mm-hmm. that time. It's very modal, and it has some very interesting harmonical aspects to it, and I just find it interesting. Maybe it's because I know the tunes and I grew up with them, but mm-hmm. I always found them compared to, I hate to say, what we're hearing today, but I mean, you know, it got less interesting, I think. Mm-hmm. What was interesting, all the songs we picked come from the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. Mm-hmm. And that's where we stopped. Because when I started looking at the 70s and the 80s, they weren't, I mean, it's not like I don't like Evergreen or like The Way We Were or, you know, I don't know, Nobody Does It Better or stuff like that. But they didn't lend themselves to jazz. as much. Mm-hmm. They became more 70s pop songs or, you know, that style. And so
kind of lost that little elegance
and
sophistication.
It kind of lost it a little bit. Mm-hmm. So we found everything we've chosen comes from before, where they're written by Irving Berlin or these people who we think of as jazz standards, you know. So we have a couple of tunes from the past, like Cheek to Cheek and from with by Irving Berlin. And
so there's some of the earliest songs.
The earlier stuff. Mm-hmm. And and besides some a couple of R&H pieces, Rodgers and Hammerstein. We had to throw the movie musical in there. And Garth found this Ray Charles singing "Oh, What a Beautiful Morning," and he just went on a trip on a conference, and he presented this presentation about famous songs like that sung by unusual people, and that was one of the songs he used. So he played that for me in his office, and it was very interesting. And he said, I really want to do this tune, just because he had just done this whole workshop on it. So we're doing that.
And you're going to take that one on as well.
Yes. And a few other favorites.
We're talking about a concert that's going to take place this Saturday. And last year you all had it in Burke Theater. Is it going to be there again?
Yeah, it's the same place, same time, same situation.
So you'll have a piano
just
on stage.
Different piano, a percussionist, a bassist, and me.
Very simple.
Very little jazz, little jazz. It feels, I mean, the room turns into this little jazz club. It feels like it's very intimate. And if you haven't been to the Burke Theater, this is a good chance because it's very intimate space and it's perfect for this.
It's a treat.
It just holds 200 people.
That's right.
It's great.
Yeah, it has a little intensity to it because it's all stadium seating and you're looking down in this lighted area. Very, very nice. Did you all record the concert last year?
No. We don't. You know, that all has issues with rights and billable people and stuff, so we don't. If somebody did, I've never heard it.
Well, just thinking, since it's only 200 people that can go to the theater for that performance, can people get tickets ahead of time?
Yes, they're for sale at the School of Music, and also Lafayette Music Company has some tickets for us for sale, or you can just buy them at the door.
Well, considering
Saturday,
how few
7:30,
seats.
That's what I said. Mm-hmm. Seating is limited, so get your tickets ahead of time, then we'll know you're coming.
So you're going to be playing and singing.
I get to do both. I'm singing more with the group, which I asked Garth if I could this year. Last year, I just sang the first set and the end. And I said, I like to sing more with the trio. I think that was the more fun part for me, was to sing with them rather than just sit there and play for myself. I can do that at home. You know? But I don't get to sing with a little jazz trio very often. So we're doing the first set. We're doing a middle set, and then we're doing the final piece, which I'm not going to say what it is because it's a surprise.
All right,
and then the rest is kind of the same thing like last year. It's showing the original version, and then Garth and the trio will do a jazz arrangement of those.
Well, this is actually a really good time to have this concert. I know it's after the semester's over, but the cultural season's winding down just a little bit.
There's a whole lot going on. So.
So it's a great time to go to this concert. If you have just tuned in, my guest is Sean Roy. He is director of the UL Opera Theater at UL Lafayette. They are putting together a second fundraiser for the Friends of Music. It's an organization that helps the School of Music out. And the faculty are now helping out the Friends of Music with this concert of Hollywood jazz, great standards from the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s that you can hear on Saturday night. We advise getting tickets ahead of time because, again, only about 200
seats. 200 seats.
Well, tell us just a bit more about why it's so important for there to be scholarship opportunities for students in the School of Music. It seems to be such a large effort in that school to get scholarships.
I think because we have such competition. And like I always tell people, when I was in school, when I went to this university, everybody went to their hometown school. There were no scholarships. Nobody got a scholarship. So you just went to your hometown school, we were all happy, and we got our degree and, you know, went on with life. But now it isn't that way anymore. We have to compete with all the other universities, and it becomes about where the kids can get the most money. It's kind of unfortunate, you know, that they'll go for that more than for a program or for a teacher. So that's our way of competition. And we're limited, especially with the, you know, with the economy situation. Some of the endowed scholarships got cut or not funded. So the Friends of Music got started, I guess, what year is this? Is it 13th year? I'm not even sure how many years it's been around. And that was their main purpose from the beginning. a group of ladies, as we say, call them the Friends of Music Ladies, because that's what they are. And they're wonderful. And they meet once a month for a meeting and talk about how they can raise money. And that's what they do. And they're great. I mean, it's growing every year. Every year they've given us a little more, a little more, a little more. And they're happy as clams to do that. So,
Well, and whenever I interview faculty or students from the School of Music, I'm struck by just how busy those students are, faculty as well, but the students have so much practicing to do, and they're required to be in so many performances.
Right. They don't have individuals. A lot of them don't have a chance to work or have a job outside. Some of them
makes
do,
it much more
and
difficult.
They don't get to participate in a lot of the stuff because they aren't on scholarship or they have to work just to eat.
Yeah.
So they don't have a chance to really take advantage of everything they could by being in an extra ensemble or, you know, being in a show with me or being in an extra, you know, whatever it is. So these scholarships really help us out, not only to get them to come to school here, but
to make their lives possible while they're here.
Yeah, to make them sane so they don't fail all their classes because they have to work 30 hours besides
being
in school.
And I guess we're the beneficiaries as well because we get to hear all of these great performances through the School of Music, whether it's classical or jazz or just percussion, so many amazing performances throughout the year that the students and faculty present. So if people have an opportunity either to join the Friends of Music and help them out that way or attend this concert, very, very beneficial to the students in the School of Music. So does the UL Opera Theater have a performance this summer?
No.
We're taking the
summer off.
All right. Any preview of what's going to happen in the fall?
Yes. The fall is going to be, we're going back to opera because I have a younger group coming up now. We always have to start over at some point and have some graduates who are leaving and going on to grad school, and they're doing very well. And but now I have to kind of train a new younger group who haven't had the world of opera in their laps yet. So it's what I call getting their operatic feet wet. And we're doing an evening of Italian comic opera scenes. So it'll be all Italian opera in English. We'll be doing it in English. And it'll be right here in Burke. And it should be a lot of fun. Some Mozart, some Rossini, some Donizetti, some fun stuff.
So very fun, light way to introduce them to the world
of
opera.
Yes, and to teach our students what that world is about and how to deal with it.
Well, what other genres of music does the opera theater work with? I mean, obviously opera.
Mostly opera and musical theater. That's pretty it. I mean, that's pretty much it. That's all we have time for.
That's right.
We don't get around to jazz or anything else. Well,
except in a situation like this.
Yeah, for me. But no, I mean, musical theater is very rooted in jazz. So, I mean, when you look at two of the songs we're doing are Rodgers and Hammerstein, they're from musical theater. So, but that all came from jazz.
Well, we certainly looked forward to all of their performances again throughout the year. I know that on the website, the School of Music website, you have a calendar that people can look at and find out what's happening.
Yeah, you can go to our website, music.louisiana.edu, or there's also
ulArts.com.
I'm glad you remember it.
I think if you just type in UL College of the
Arts.com, there you go.
That'll
bring right to the calendar.
All right. So good place to bookmark the music school's calendar of performances. There are many. Again, solo performances, orchestral performances.
We just met for our concert series for next year, trying to pick the artists for that. And it's always something, trying to plan something new or having a guest artist over to help enrich the students' lives and teach them what's out there. I just got a tenor who's going to be coming, who's singing in Germany. So we've never had that experience of having an artist who's performing overseas right now. And the difference in the style of singing over there and how the career works overseas as opposed to America. So that'll be a nice experience for everybody.
Very stimulating. Well, we'll look forward to that season coming up. But again, you can enjoy the talent of the faculty here at UL Lafayette and the School of Music this Saturday, 7:30 in Burke Hawthorne Theater. It's in Burke Hawthorne Hall. Tickets are available at the door, but again, because it is such limited seating, you may want to get them ahead of time.
It's better to be happy and have your ticket in your hand. Lafayette Music Company is very gracious in selling tickets for us, and also you can go to Sheila Beasley, our secretary
at the
School of Music, and she'll be happy to sell you one.
All right. Well,
and there's you can call 482-6012 for more information.
All right. Well, give that number a call and reserve your tickets for an evening of magical movie music with a sparkle of jazz. And that's Hollywood Jazz this coming Saturday. Again, benefit for the Friends of Music here at UL Lafayette. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, Judith.
What's happening in the arts and culture in South Louisiana. In Lake Charles this evening, the Bayou Bell Choir presents Cinco Passions de Mayo, or 15 Ways to Ring a Bell. The choir will be directed by Bruce Allured, and they will perform works by Dave Brubeck, jazz by Gershwin. There will be spirituals, original works for handbells, as well as popular tunes. That concert will be at 7:30 tonight in Paxton Hall of the First United Methodist Church in Lake Charles. That's on Kirkman Street. For more information, you can call the director, Bruce Allured, at 439-6610, or just show up this evening. It is a free concert. Tomorrow evening, the Lafayette High Strings Spring Concert will take place in the Lafayette High School Auditorium. That's at 7 o'clock on Wednesday. It is free and open to everyone. They'll be playing lots of great music. There will be music from Alice in Wonderland, Bioshock. There will be pirate music and lots of other interesting strings music. Trail and Bike Lafayette have a number of activities to celebrate National Bike Month. The Ride of Silence will be taking place tomorrow. Cyclists will meet tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock in Parc Sans Souci. I believe they're asking you to wear a helmet. The ride is free, and the cyclists are riding no faster than 12 miles per hour. The Ride of Silence is to honor cyclists who have been injured or killed while cycling. Bike to Work Day is May 18th. It will start off at 7 o'clock, coffee with the city parish president, and then the commuter convoy following coffee. And then the bike corral will take place at Downtown Alive May 18th and 25th. For more information on any of these activities, you can go to their websites or Facebook pages. Either Trails or Bike Lafayette will have information about the activities and National Bike Month. Rent will be performed in Burke Hawthorne Hall, opening tomorrow and running through the 18th, this week the 16th, 17th, and 18th, and the following week as well. Tickets are available by calling 322-4102. That's 322-4102. The musical Rent will be performed in Burke Hawthorne Hall. Eye of the Beholder, which is the 26th annual open competition at the Lafayette Art Association and Gallery, is accepting submissions starting tomorrow and going through May 25th. Artists may submit up to three pieces of 3D art and up to five pieces of 2D art. For more information, call the Lafayette Art Association or go to their website, which is lafayetteart.org. The film series The Station presents the silent film The Lost World from 1925. It will be shown at Cité des Arts tomorrow evening. The evening starts at 6:45. It is free and open to everyone. The League of Women Voters of Lafayette will sponsor a luncheon to engage voters in a discussion of local school reform issues. This public program will be held on Thursday from noon until 1 at Acadiana Open Channel. That's at 1010 Jefferson Street in the Rosa Parks Transportation Center. The event is free and open to everyone, and there will be a complimentary lunch served starting at 11:30. In Gran Coteau at Casa Azul on Thursday, author Ben Sanmel will be reading from his new book, Ernie Cato, the R&B Emperor of New Orleans. This is a part of a series of music biographies published by the Historic New Orleans Collection. This is the second in that series. Ben Sanmel will be in our studios talking about the book on Thursday afternoon. After Ben's reading, there will be a musical performance by Yvette Landry at Casa Azul. The evening begins at 7 and goes until around 9 o'clock. Downtown Alive continues this coming Friday, May 18th, with a performance in Parc Sans Souci by the Creole String Beans. Music starts at around 6 o'clock. There will be 2 one-act plays performed at Theater 810, opening this Friday, May 18th. The duo is called A Woman's Journey. Both one-act plays were written by Kimberly Johnson Nagel. Tickets are available through Theater 810. You can call them or go to their Eventbrite site. That's this weekend, the 18th through the 20th, and then the play will be performed the 25th through the 27th as well. Jazz performer Dr. Michael White will be at the Acadiana Center for the Arts this Friday. His performance starts at 8 o'clock. Tickets are available online through the Acadiana Center for the Arts, or you can call their ticket office at 233-7060. Dr. Michael White won the Endowment for the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities Humanist of the Year Award and has recently appeared in Tremé as well. The Arts and Culture Collective in Arneville will open a new exhibit, a collection of works by photographer Sam Irwin called Art in Agriculture. That exhibit will open this Friday, May 18th at 7 o'clock during the New News Art and Culture Collective's monthly potluck social. All are invited to attend. Sam Irwin is the press secretary for the Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry, as well as the editor of the Louisiana Market Bulletin Farm Journal. And we will be speaking with Sam about his work later this week. The Tipitina's Co-op is officially open now, and on May 18th, Friday, they will be co-presenting a free show at Artmosphere featuring Imagine I Am, The Pits, and Christine Pierce. And it's in support of Let's Be Totally Clear and the Lafayette Economic Health Initiative. For more information, you can call the Tipitina's Co-op. Cajuns for Bayou Teche will have a Bayou Teche cleanup this Saturday starting at 9 o'clock. They will be meeting at the park's boat launch. For more information, you can contact Blake Cuvier or just show up with your boats, your gloves, drinks and garbage bags will be provided. That's this Saturday, 9 o'clock at the park's LA boat launch. Big Brothers Big Sisters of Acadiana will hold another orientation session for potential volunteers this Saturday, 10:30 in the morning at their offices in downtown Lafayette. For more information, call their offices or you can go to their website, which is acadianabigs.com. The Skyliners Big Band will be performing for their third dance of the season this Saturday, May 19th. They are a nonprofit organization dedicated to preserving dance music. They are over 60 years old. They've been performing for 60 years in Lafayette. Quite a few new musicians have joined them over the years. They are a 20-piece jazz orchestra. They will be at the Petroleum Club this Saturday, 7:30 to 11, 111 Hyman Boulevard in the Oil Center. Tickets will be available at the door. For more information, you can contact Rodolfo Espinoza at skylinersbigband@gmail.com. This Saturday, Jim Phillips will present The Spinner's Web, a storyteller's night that will take place at Cité des Arts, 7 o'clock. The evening will feature Barry Ancelet, storyteller and folklorist, Mitch Reed, a storyteller and musician with Beau Soleil, and Sally O. Donlan. Also, Danny Barnhill will be there, and Jim Phillips will be the master of ceremonies. That's this Saturday, 7 o'clock at Cité des Arts, The Spinner's Web, a storyteller's night. Also on Saturday, Saturday at Burke Hall Theater, the Hollywood Jazz Concert, a benefit for the UL Friends of Music, featuring Sean Roy and the Garth Alper Trio. Tickets are available at the door, or you can contact the School of Music for tickets. Opening this Saturday at the Hilliard University Art Museum, an exhibit called Faith and Form. It is a collection of art, both fine art and decorative art, from area churches, cathedrals, and private collections. Again, that will open this Saturday to the general public at the Hilliard University Art Museum. Animal Aid will have a benefit this coming Sunday, May 20th, called Painting with a Twist. You're invited to go to Lafayette Animal Aid and paint the homeless cats and dogs who are there. They actually have a home at Lafayette Animal Aid. It is a benefit for Lafayette Animal Aid. For more information or to make a reservation, call them at 234-9783. And there will be a harp recital on Sunday. The students of Betty Vedrine will be giving a harp recital at 2:30 in the afternoon at the South Regional Library in Lafayette, which is on Johnston Street. There will be about six students who will be performing on the harp. And the Acadiana Symphony Youth Orchestra will give their final concert of the season this coming Sunday, 2 o'clock at the Episcopal School of Acadiana's Cade campus. All are invited to attend. For more information, please call 232-4277. And for a listing of programs on KRVS, you can stop by our website, which is krvs.org, clicking on the schedule button and downloading a weekly schedule, or you can look for individual programs as well. Lots to do at our site, including supporting KRVS. Just click on the support KRVS button and find out all the many ways that you can support KRVS, whether it's through individual contributions, underwriting, or perhaps donating a vehicle. Lots of ways to do that. You can find out about it at our website, krvs.org. Stay with us this afternoon and evening. We're with NPR's All Things Considered from 4 to 6. From 6 to 7, Terry Gross hosts Fresh Air. At 7 o'clock, we join From the Top with Chris O'Reilly. At 8, we begin our evening of locally produced jazz, beginning with John Green's Night Train Jazz from 8 to 10. From 10 to midnight, Djalma Garnier's Passport to Modern Jazz. At midnight, it's Judy Carmichael's Jazz Inspired, and at 1 o'clock in the morning, it's Born on the Bayou. In just a moment, we join NPR's All Things Considered.